Weekend Breakfast with Sarah Jane Mukwala King.
Saturday and Sunday, 7 to 10 a.m.
Good morning, Graham. How are you?
Hey, can you send some of that lekker warm weather my way, please? I would very much welcome it with open arms.
Yeah.
The cold dreariness just will not recede from the ever wet North Yorkshire countryside, and I blame you personally.
Sure, no, and quite rightly so. And I want to say to you, don't worry, Graham, in a couple of months things will get better, but they won't. But that's the decision you've made, and that rests entirely on your shoulders to move to the wet and windy Isles. So I feel absolutely no sympathy for you whatsoever, sir. Thank you very much indeed. Graham, before we get into your stories, just very quickly, have you seen Baby Reindeer?
Yes, I scoffed a lot. I ate all the entire show in basically one sitting.
Same.
Like a greedy so-and-so.
Same.
And it was, it's really, really dark at parts, as you so rightfully pointed out, SJ, but absolutely enthralling watch.
Right.
Really, like, very difficult to critique because it's just so well put together and well paced.
Yeah.
But definitely those dark parts, without giving away too much. I actually forewarned my fiance. I said to her as well, Megan, I was like, just watch out.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a certain episode which is particularly triggering.
Very.
But really, can't believe that it's a true story. Hey?
I know. Yeah, I just found it really refreshing television. Actually, as bleak as it was in parts, I just don't think we've seen anything like that for a while. And the vulnerability of a male lead, and the honesty of a male lead, and the stripped away of kind of machismo I thought it was really powerful. Anyway, we're going to be talking about it more in the show later with Gail, but I just wanted to ask if you'd seen it. But of course you are, because of course you have. You've got your finger on the pulse. You've got your finger on the pulse of it all. Where your finger has been on the pulse largely has been looking at Freedom Day. And the president's address to people living in Soweto. What have you got for us this morning?
Absolutely, SJ. And of course, yesterday you had yourself on air as well, marking exactly 30 years when democracy had finally come to this country, the beautiful South Africa. And it finally came at a time when, of course, you know, we had seen the assassination of Chris Hani. South Africa was on tenterhooks at the time. The fact that, you know, a referendum was held to even hold elections, that we can move past apartheid after it being entrenched within the Southern African society for such a long time. You know, people often say South Africa had become independent in 1910. Did it? It only became the Union of South Africa. It became sort of independent more likely from a British colonial perspective, but it was never independent for the political majority, the African majority of South Africa. Those political rights were stripped from the black majority since, you know, 1902, since the Treaty of Vereeniging. So South Africa being an apartheid and it sought an oligarchy at one point because it was just cut off from the world. Now it was suddenly open to the world. SJ, you know, the economy became, you know, what macroeconomists will call open to the neoliberal, you know, economic policies of the day. And suddenly, you know, we could enjoy the fruits and the benefits of being open to the rest of the world. But over the past 30 years, of course, SJ, what we've seen is this pervasive inequality that has continued to outstrip the gains, so to speak, of the poverty reduction efforts, and sometimes very little at best in South Africa. And that's really been the theme of what many politicians have taken to, of course, using the moment of those very historical 1994 elections yesterday, 30 years on, basically to say, at least from the president's perspective, holding Freedom Day celebrations at the Union Buildings, Pretoria, marking those 30 years. The president specifically said that you know, more needs to be done, as you just heard in the Eyewitness News Bulletin, that inequality is just one of those thorns in the side of South Africa that just won't go away. And it is. We remain one of the most unequal societies on earth. How that's going to happen, seen as South Africa's economy is so much open to the rest of the world, and how we are now sort of pinning our stripes to other political you know, blocks like bricks, for example. How that's really going to pay off, no one really knows at this stage. So Ramaphosa, however, he was saying SJNC government has made some significant strides in ending gender inequality. For example, there's a lot more women, for example, in senior seats in parliament, judges in our benches, magistrates, more than 60% of public servants in government are now women.
Is that, then you had the mayor, you know, is that can we lay credit for that at the ANC's door though, Graham, or is that just the tide of how globally for the most part that has been the way forward? I mean, you could probably, with the exception of a few places, you know, perhaps you know, where there isn't, I mean, you know, we're hearing this morning about in Iraq and the criminalisation of same-sex couples, etc., etc. With the exception of a few rather places where there is an extreme politics, the general sway, the general tide has been in every country across the world over the last 30 years that women's rights and gender equality has improved. I think it's rather disingenuous of Ramaphosa to claim that this is, you know, a sort of bastion of the ANC success. I'm not convinced by that, nor am I convinced by
Yes, well, he's gonna he's gonna take any fruit that he can,
right?
Out ahead of the elections. And of course we're going to get to the electricity situation now, but I totally agree with you. I mean, you know, in terms of, despite some bad apples, staying with the fruit analogy or metaphor, you know, if you're open to democracy, these gains of having, you know, more women in very senior positions of government or et al society should be, you know, a foregone conclusion at this stage.
But don't they just become a byproduct of the theme of democracy to an extent? I guess, I don't know. Maybe we're being a bit cynical. Don't think we are.
Sunday morning blues.
Yeah.
And then you had the mayor. Just to quickly finish off on our 30 days Freedom Day, you know, events. We had the mayor, of course, at the Langa Freedom Run Race event, which become obviously very historical over the years. I would really like to take part in the Langa 10-kilometer race sometime in the future when I'm back in the country. But the mayor was there saying that, you know, many people obviously still rightfully live in poverty. I mean, Langa is one of considered, you know, in parts crossroads up to Guguletu, some of the most dangerous areas where you shouldn't be in a car, some say, at 1 o'clock in the morning or at an intersection, because it can be really, really dangerous. I mean, these areas, poverty has continued. And of course, Gordon Hill-Lewis, representing the DA, of course, had his mayor's cap on. But that's one of the things that, you know, has followed the DA around into this election, is whether or not, you know, the gains that they say on a service delivery level are sort of meeting the plight of poverty in some of Cape Town's more dangerous or more poverty-stricken areas. Well, the mayor says many people still live in poverty around this time of the year. And so it's become much worse. He says it's really terrible. It's an oppressive poverty as seen in South Africa. Nonetheless, the Freedom Day race was won by one Edward Jack. And he was quoted as saying on Eyewitness News that this day means so much to him, because it's like Freedom Day gatherings are celebrating with other people and having some fun. And of course, the race was just sort of a lighter side to market. Very quickly, SJ, all the other parties have had their say. I mean, everybody has used the moment to be able to come out and basically sing alongside the same sort of hymn sheet. Of course, we're all watching about how the EFF is going to be able to get more of the popular vote, so to speak, in these elections, whether or not that's going to happen. The EFF says South Africans must vote for a party that's going to change their lives. Still a lot needs to be done when it comes to the South African story. And then in Soweto, we had the EWN reporters on the ground speaking to some people there. Some felt like, hey, you know, in my community in Soweto, there's a new mall there, you know. There's things in terms of infrastructure that were there that weren't there in 1994.
Yeah.
Others feel like those sort of minute gains have been overshadowed by the sort of much bigger economic policies. And really going back to the fact that in 1994, SJ, South Africa was really flung open to the economy. And what that means is that those pervasive things like inequality do become quite entrenched. And when apartheid has really segregated the country along those sort of like poverty lines, it really has become more entrenched, more so in South Africa than many other places.
I think what was interesting for me, Graham, was listening to the news at 7 o'clock, and maybe they'll we'll have another clip in the 8 o'clock Eyewitness News, was Ramaphosa asking that we have the same level of enthusiasm going into the May 29 elections as perhaps we did have in 1994. Now, I don't believe for a minute that he's a stupid man, but that seems to me to be an incredibly naive comment. I mean, it's just, it's actually outrageous to suggest for a minute that we would be going into these elections, the most significant elections, and significant because everyone is just so fed up with how things are at the moment and have been over the years.
Absolutely.
That we would possibly be going into these elections with the same level of hope. It just seems extraordinary, and I get it. You know, as you were saying, it's kind of clutching at those final straws and that last attempt to kind of get us all activated. But I mean, I don't know. It just seemed a bizarre thing to me for him to have said. You can't possibly 30 years down the line, after so many people remain dissatisfied from whatever sector of the country, socioeconomically, racially they come from, and say let's all go in with the same sort of hope and excitement, whatever, of as we were in 1994. The other thing I just want to say, folks, is that our EWN reporters have, over the last few weeks, been visiting various parts of the country, perhaps the lesser known parts of the country. I mean, Soweto is a very obvious one, isn't it? It's a very political area. It holds a lot of political significance. But our reporters have been going into other smaller areas, less well known, to ask the people there, where you don't necessarily see the likes of us. Or they dragged Thabo Mbeki out of retirement to go and do a walkabout in Soweto in the week, which was astonishing to me given the things that he's had to say about the ANC in the past. But you know, that getting the feeling from people, almost the forgotten South Africans, those who are still wading to school through, you know, 2 feet of water, those who don't have running water, those who don't have electricity, and really giving us a picture of the reality for some people whose lives literally have not changed at all in the past 30 years. And it's fascinating. You can find all of those little packages, news packages and articles on primemediaplus.com. Let's move on. Let's move on, Graham. What's up next?
So did you see this? Okay, listen, I can't come and now claim my little noddy badge for the fact that I've been enjoying a stable electricity supply.
Sure.
In the Northern Hemisphere, and in the UK. But in South Africa, I mean, I speak to family members all the time and they're like super stoked. And I'm sure everybody's been so happy that, you know, the very basic level of service delivery, which is the electricity supply to the country, has been what? It's been fairly stable now for around 30 days, SJ. And now Eskom's come out and basically as late as Friday, suggesting to the markets very strategically, SJ, before the markets closed, that guess what? Over the winter season, this is not going to be anything more than stage 2 power cuts. And that really signaled to the markets on Friday a 1% strengthening of the rand. And it was actually the most buoyed or most, strongest push that any emerging currency saw on Friday, SJ, in fact, which shows you the rand's resilience. And it really does, has had to take a whopping when it's come to the Eskom situation. So the fact that we are still going to be able to enjoy what's owed to us for the prices we pay is a stable electricity supply. That's been the sort of promise from Eskom CEO Dan Marakane. But now, as we move to the elections, there's been sort of like rumblings around the fact that Eskom's now signed an agreement with the independent electoral, the IEC, to limit the extent of power cuts when it comes to the May 29th elections. And basically has now come out to have to defend that, so to speak, because obviously it has been an election, topic for many political parties to jump on. Eskom's been accused of being manipulated by the ANC-led government to keep the lights on at all costs. And the group executive for distribution in Eskom, Monde Bala, came out and basically said, this is standard procedure. They signed many different MOUs. But of course, an MOU signed with the IEC ahead of the elections, while that might be sort of like a standard fare in the past, it will carry with it that sort of political albatross, if you will, as we head into the elections, because it should just be kept on. Come on, man. And then I thought I'd just add this, because it's something that perhaps, you know, some of the media houses may have not added, because we've been worried about, well, however, the strength and the rand would be back on the news that, you know, the electricity supply situation would be fine into the coming months. But hey, Eskom's saying, political parties, please don't put your election posters on our you know, electricity substations and other infrastructure, because you might be shocked. They actually had to send out a statement on Friday saying people have been shocked or electrocuted in the past or severely hurt or even died, you know, putting election posters up on substations. I mean, you'll go to parts of, for example, Alex, I remember in Johannesburg seeing election posters all over electricity infrastructure. It's just one of those things that they say, please don't do as we move into the elections. Well, Eskom, please keep your electricity on, please, so that we can also vote with the lights on. That would be nice. Hey.
As if there was any doubt that the electricity was going to stay on during elections. Or the fact, I mean, come really, or the fact that we've been enjoying a load shedding free for the last, I don't even know how long it's been. That's not been an accident. My fear is that once May 29th has passed, come 30th of May, we're going to be paying for it with stage 16. Your last story, I absolutely love. Which is fantastic. In fact, I was talking to Vicky yesterday. We had a guest on our show. I won't embarrass him in case he's listening, who was Irish. Nice. And I love an Irish accent. But apparently, the Irish have fallen short because they've come in behind New Zealand and the Afrikaans accent as being the sexiest in the world, according to a new survey.
SJ, South Africa has once again made the list for having one of the sexiest accents in the world, okay? But now, my real thinking here is whether or not, you know, when you talk about the South African accent, or you're talking about it from an Afrikaner perspective, or you're talking about... Okay, that's really embellishing, right? But now, here's the question. Is it an Afrikaner accent specifically, or is it just like the South African accent?
There's
that's
no such
the big
thing,
question
though,
mark about it. I have well, about this.
I'm always baffled.
So it's like Big Seven Travel that came out, they asked their readers, what's the sexiest accent in the world? First of all, we don't know how many readers they have. It could have been like three people from Aranya who decided to take this. Okay, I'm being very like analytical, but you know, it could have just been like 10 people that decided that they wanted to do this quiz. However, whatever the case may be, it was 1.5 million readers. How many took part in the specific survey? We don't know, but they decided to make South Africa, you know, second on the list behind the Kiwi accent as the South African accent being the most sexiest. But again, is it like an Afrikaner accent? Is
apparently
it like
it is. I'm looking at the list now and it says, number one, New Zealand, the Kiwi accent, which is strange actually, because that's never been an accent that when you have a conversation around what's the sexiest accent, the Kiwi accent has never come out in conversation as far as I'm aware. Although, I was watching something the other day and it used to grate me, the Kiwi accent, and now I absolutely love it. I think it's very gentle. I could listen to it all day. And then it specifically says the Afrikaans accent. I mean, there's no such thing as a South African accent, is there? The South African accent doesn't exist. If you're from Durban, if you're from Cape Town, and rather embarrassingly, after 8 o'clock, we're going to hear an interview that I did. In fact, it was my first interview that I ever did on Cape Talk, on the first ever show that I did. I think I must have just moved down from Joburg, and I've got this, and my accent sometimes is a bit strange, but I've got this kind of bastardised Johannesburg English. I don't know what it is. We're going to hear it after 8 o'clock. It's mortifying. I don't know what that's all about, but that I picked up this weird accent. In at number three, Irish accent. Oh. glorious. Four Italian.
Fantastic. When you hear it,
oh no!
Beautiful.
I mean,
it really is
northern, southern. Yeah. I'll take it. And I was actually looking at the list. So in at number 10, Brazilian Portuguese accent. Number 9, the southern USA accent, which again is interesting because at 8:40 we're going to be speaking to the creators of a podcast that I've been listening to called "People Are the Worst." Two twin sisters from Birmingham, Alabama, and they have got the most gorgeous, glorious southern accents. Number 8, Spanish accent. Number 7, French. I love a French accent. Number 6, Scottish. Mm-hmm. I also love a Scottish accent. Number 5, Australian. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like it. I don't know it's necessarily sexy, is it? I suppose, mm-hmm. I suppose it depends who it belongs to. Number 4, Italian. Sorry, go on. Yeah.
What's missing from the list is there's no British accent.
Wow.
Have you seen that? There's a Scottish and Irish is there, but,
Notable by its absence. Notable by its absence. No. Notable by its absence. I don't think, I personally don't find the British accent remotely sexy. In fact, I find it rather irritating. On that note, Graham, we're going to leave it. But you and your lovely accent, thank you very much indeed, sir. We'll chat to you again next week. Have a good one.